Welcome to the Mind Money Spectrum podcast, where your hosts, Aaron Ogti and Trishul Patel, go beyond traditional finance questions to help you explore how to use your money to achieve the freedom you want in life.
In this episode, Aaron and Trishul discuss everything Roth, including traditional IRAs versus Roth IRAs, traditional 401ks versus Roth 401ks, and IRAs versus 401ks. There's also Roth conversions and backdoor Roth contributions to consider. And Trishul even throws in some HSA and 529 pointers. Contributing to a Roth IRA or 401k is advice commonly found on the internet. But now you can understand the alternatives involved, including why a Roth can make sense and why it sometimes doesn't. And now on to our conversation.
Hi, my name is Aaron Ogti. I'm a financial advisor in the Bay Area, and I'm here with Trishul Patel, a wealth manager on the East Coast.
Hey, Aaron, great to be here today.
Great to be here as well. I know we're getting through these rough times together, and having this conversation with you does feel like a little bit of normalcy, and I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, me too, Aaron.
So today, in classic financial advisor fashion, we're going to be talking about Roth IRAs and giving a little bit of history comparing to traditional IRAs, but trying to go a little deep into just some of the technical aspects so that our listeners can really understand them to be able to use the appropriate account when they can, understand when it may not be appropriate, when there might be a better solution. But the very classic thing, if you look for retirement savings online, a lot of the advice is contribute to your Roth, contribute to your Roth IRA. And we're going to explain what that means, what does that entail, what are some of your options, why is that the kind of overwhelming default advice, but when does it not that make that much sense? So, Trishul, you ready for Roth IRAs?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. So a little bit of history. The IRA, or usually called an individual retirement account, was created in 1981 with the Economic Recovery Tax Act. And it actually technically stands for Individual Retirement Arrangement, but individual retirement account became the de facto name for that acronym IRA that it just took over. So IRAs haven't actually been around that long when you think of taxes and finance that usually go back on the scale of 100 to 150 years. So the IRA was created in 1981, and the idea is that any money you put in your IRA as an incentive for saving for retirement, the government and the IRS will give you a tax deduction on the money you put into the IRA, given that it's used for retirement specifically. And there's a lot of caveats and requirements to what that means, to be used for retirement specifically. Also, you do not pay taxes as the investments grow. So anytime the stock yields a dividend, anytime you sell a stock for a gain, anytime your bond yields interest, you don't pay taxes while it grows. And in exchange for that nice tax deduction you got up front, when you take the money out for retirement, then that money is taxed as ordinary income. And basically, the US government and IRS are trying to incentivize people to save for retirement and kind of create their own pension. The idea is that instead of employers putting money aside for retirement and the employer getting tax breaks and this additional benefit to you, that you're putting your own money aside. And when you take money out, then it's taxed the same way as your pension is. Then in 1997, the Roth IRA was created. It's actually named for Senator William Roth. So that's one of the things that kind of point out that the Roth IRA is actually named after a specific person. And the idea here was, if you put money in the Roth IRA, you no longer get that tax deduction. You put money in and you've already paid taxes just from your paycheck, from your withholdings. You still get the same tax deferral as it grows. So all those dividends, capital gains, and interest as it grows, you don't pay taxes while the money is growing. You don't pay taxes on those investments inside the Roth IRA. But when you take money out in retirement, again, there's specific rules related to what that means, then the money is tax-free. So now it's just basically the inverse or the reverse of the traditional IRA. Traditional IRA, you get the tax deduction up front. You pay taxes when money comes out. Roth IRA, you pay taxes before the money goes in, and when it take it out, it's tax-free. Trisha, does that sound like a really quick summary of a traditional IRA versus a Roth IRA?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The high-level notion is that you can, with a traditional IRA, leverage this notion of using a pre-tax contribution, putting money in before you pay your ordinary income tax. And with a Roth IRA, the difference is it's a post-tax contribution, meaning you pay your taxes first on your income, and then you put the money in.
Great. Sounds good. So one of the things that I do like to point out to people when they ask, should I contribute to a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA, is that if your tax rate is the same when you put money in and when you take money out, the way the math works is that it actually doesn't matter. You still net out the same amount. So if you put, say you have an extra $5,000 you want to save for retirement, you put $5,000 in your traditional IRA, you've gotten a tax deduction based on that, you see it grow, and then you pay taxes when it come out. Or that $5,000, let's say you pay 20% in taxes, that's your overall tax rate, combined federal and state is 20%. Instead of putting $5,000 in the traditional IRA, you put in $4,000 in the Roth IRA, you see that grow, and you have to assume that the same rate of return for both because they're going to be invested exactly the same. But when you take the money out, it's tax-free. Now, because the Roth IRA started with less money, even though you have that same tax rate at the end, they end up netting out to be exactly the same, depending on what your rate of return is in your time frame. But if your tax rate is 20% at the time that you were going to contribute the money and is 20% when you take the money out, it actually doesn't matter which one you use. They're both exactly the same. Now, when we're having a real life conversation, trying to predict what your tax rates are in the future is both very difficult, but it also is kind of common sense that you don't know what your taxes are going to be in the future, but there's a decent chance that they will be different. So for most people, you try to apply some kind of common sense. Do you think your taxes and your tax rate will be lower now or lower in the future? And for many people who are younger, earlier in their careers, and their incomes are lower, there's actually a pretty decent chance that their tax rate's lower early in their life and their tax rate will be higher later in their life. That's the main reason why I see a lot of the online advice for people just starting out is contribute to the Roth, because at a very large default assumption, most likely they will have a lower tax rate earlier in their career than they would in retirement. Do you need to explain that math a little deeper, or does that concept make sense to you, Trisha?
It does. I can even throw some simple numbers behind that. Let's say you put your $6,000 into a Roth. And what that means is you pay taxes, and let's say you earn 7% and you let that grow for 30 years. Well, just to show a little bit about the benefit of compounding, what that means is your $6,000 that you put in, let's say you paid a 24% tax rate. That's the marginal tax rate for many people who have incomes above, you know, let's say 80,000. Well, after 30 years or so, that 6,000 could grow to about $34,712. And that's the same amount that your traditional IRA would grow if you get that tax deferral, meaning you don't pay taxes initially, but you pay that 24% income tax once the account grows to about 45,000. You pay that 24%, and now you're back to the same dollar amount you would have otherwise. So yeah, the math basically comes out the same, but the cool part is $6,000 doesn't sound like much, but after 30 years, 34,000, again, after taxes, is a good amount of money. If you do that every year, that can pretty much make a pretty nice nest egg for you when you retire.
So when it comes to Roth IRAs, again, if you can't, if you think your income is lower, or especially specifically your income tax rate is lower now, then yes, a Roth IRA makes a lot of sense. And there's a few other benefits to Roth IRAs. I wasn't anticipating going into them deeper today, but there's things like you use it for a first-time home purchase. You can take some of the contributions out. And there's enough of these really nice benefits that the IRS also placed in on the Roth IRA's contribution limit. So not traditional IRAs already had the contribution limits. Currently it's $6,000. Is it double checking? It is $6,000 in 2020. If you are age 50 or older, you can make a catch-up contribution. It's currently an extra $1,000. So in 2020, you can contribute $6,000 to both a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA. If you're over 50, you can do another $1,000 to get up to $7,000. And that's the same for both traditional IRAs and Roth IRAs. Roth IRAs also have income restrictions where you can't contribute to a Roth IRA if you make over, in 2020, $139,000 as a single or $206,000 married filing jointly. So there were enough of these benefits that Congress and the IRS didn't want the super wealthy funding the Roth IRAs with too much money because of some of the benefits later on in life and some of the benefits when it comes to inheritance and estate plan. So that those are the numbers to think about when it comes to contributing to a Roth is, one, there's limits on how much you can put in the first place, and two, you have to be earning less than those income restrictions. Are there any other key factors when it comes to IRAs or Roths that you think are relevant for our listeners to understand?
Yeah, happy to point out a few things. Again, that $6,000 is for yourself. So if you're married, your wife can also put $6,000. So you can double that to $12,000. And what that means is $12,000 has to be split across your Roth or traditional combined so that you have $12,000. You can't put $12,000 in each, just so we're clear about that. Mm-hmm. The other thing to think about is, let's say your income is low right now, then yeah, a Roth does make sense. And if your income is high right now and you do go with a traditional, what we mentioned in the last episode is that there may be a period in your life where your income drops lower. And it might make sense at that point to actually convert that money that you had in a traditional into a Roth. Meaning, let's say your income is high now, you're making a couple hundred thousand a year, you put money into your traditional, so you get a nice tax break. But then somewhere in your 40s, you take a sabbatical. Well, your income might drop pretty low at that point for a year or two, in which case it might make sense to take some of this traditional IRA money and convert it to a Roth. And that way you pay taxes at a very low rate, or maybe even something closer to zero. And then you can keep that money growing in a Roth for a good amount of time and just take it out tax-free when you need it after age 59 and a half. So that's something to think about. And we mentioned this as a strategy for even people approaching retirement, when in the last episode, there may be a period in your life where, let's say you're in your 60s and you need to take some access of your income through taxable accounts, but you've quit working and you don't want to access your money in your retirement accounts just yet, but your income is low. So this might be a period where it might make sense to take some of that traditional IRA money and convert it to a Roth. And that way you can get more money into the Roth on a go-forward basis. So these are just things to consider. If you have a high tax burden at the moment, that may not be true in the future.
Okay, so now we're talking about Roth conversion, the idea of taking money out of a traditional IRA, putting it into a Roth IRA, and we have to pay taxes on the amount that we convert. Okay, and this is money we got a tax deduction up front, but now we're kind of tactically choosing the year when we know our tax rate is lower. So our tax rate was higher at the beginning. We contributed to a traditional IRA. We find that 1 year in the future, whether, like you said, sabbatical, could be difference between retirement age and when Social Security starts, could be you were laid off or just taking a year off. Or I've actually also seen with some young couples when they have a child and they're on maternity and paternity leave, that there's a decent chance their incomes are lower in that particular year. That can also be a good year to make that Roth conversion. You pay taxes on the amount you convert at the income rates of that particular year, and then you have Roth IRA dollars growing moving forward.
Yeah, that's it. And it might make sense if you have a good amount of planning put in place. The other thing to consider is if you do have money in a traditional IRA, you would be required at some point to take a minimum distribution. This is known as a required minimum distribution, and it kind of kicks in your 70s at 72 now. And what the government is saying is they want some of their tax money sooner rather than later. So they're going to say you can't keep that money in a traditional IRA indefinitely. You're going to have to take some out over time once you hit 72 and onward. Well, let's say you don't actually need all of that money. Well, you could take that money and do a conversion instead and then keep it in a Roth longer. Mm-hmm. So you have to pay your taxes, but instead of putting it in a taxable account from that point forward, since you don't need that money you've taken out, or at least you don't need all of it, and then you can let it grow into a Roth on a go-forward basis.
Yes, and one quick caveat. You can't do a Roth conversion to satisfy your RMD. If you happen to be over 72 and you have to take money out of your traditional IRA as the required minimum distribution, you can't do a Roth conversion with that amount. You could do a Roth conversion and lower your future RMDs, but the conversion itself does not satisfy the RMD.
Right. You have to be careful of the timing, but you can lower your future tax burden by keeping something like this in mind.
Mm-hmm. So the other big question I get is, should I contribute to a Roth IRA or my 401k? One, what's a 401k? And two, how would you answer that question when people ask you?
So there are a few things to think about with the 401k itself. There are higher limits to the 401k, and there's an employer match. So sometimes with a 401k, this is an employer-sponsored plan where the employer is designating a couple of things. One, the ability for you to either put in pre-tax money, similar to a traditional IRA, there's a traditional 401k, or now the more popular option that's bubbling up is a post-tax 401k or a Roth 401k. And with either of these, the employer may do a match, meaning if you put in X percentage, they may match that percentage up to a limit, let's say 3 or 4% of your salary. So one thing to consider about is if there is a match, you want to do that first, because that's basically free money from your employer. They're going to match you dollar for dollar up to that point. The second thing to consider is, again, is your 401k plan pre-tax or post-tax, just like your Roth? So you're going to need to go through a similar analysis of what makes sense for you. Is your tax burden high at the moment, in which case a Roth may not make sense? Or is your tax burden low, and in which case a Roth may make sense over a pre-tax contribution to a 401k? But if you're aiming to max out all of the above, then by all means, max out all of the above as much as you can.
So trying to think of a way to avoid getting super technical, but you can contribute to a traditional 401k and you can get the tax deduction on that contribution because it's an employer-sponsored plan. Then you can also put money in your Roth IRA because you're not taking a deduction. You can't max out your traditional 401k and a traditional IRA because you are limited on the deductions you can take to the max of the 401k amount. And actually there's phase out. So if you try and contribute to both, you kind of get the deduction half. So if you did half of a traditional IRA contribution and half of a 401k contribution, that actually kind of is your full deduction. And because of the lower contribution limits on IRAs, it almost always makes sense to max out a traditional 401k and not even bother contributing to a traditional IRA to try and get a deduction. But because the Roth IRA is not getting a deduction the year of the contribution, you can contribute to both of those.
Right. It also should be said that the limits for the 401k are much higher, around $18,000 a year. Let's say you max out your $18,000 in a traditional 401k, your wife does the same, and you put $12,000 in a Roth IRA for you and your wife. Well, now you're putting close to $50,000 in a tax advantage account a year. And if you do this over your career, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, just with this alone, you can do pretty well with your retirement.
Yes. So I agree with all that. There's a couple of problems that kind of come up in practice. So the 401k contributions, just like IRA contributions, they do go up a little bit each year. And these are technically acts of Congress, but Congress has been pretty consistent about increasing these amounts. So in 2020, the most you can contribute to a 401k is $19,500. And then if you happen to be over 50, there's also that catch-up contribution of $6,000. $6,500. So if you're over 50, you could actually contribute $26,000 to your 401k. Now, you could also contribute to a Roth IRA if you wanted to. But if you're contributing, let's say you're not over 50, and you're contributing $19,500, and you're saving 15% to get there, that implies that your income is $130,000. And I don't know if you remember earlier, if you're single, you can't contribute to a Roth IRA if you make over $139,000. So kind of doing that math again, if you're single, you contribute $19,500 to a Roth IRA and you make $139,000 per year, you're already saving 14%. And 14% is a pretty healthy retirement savings if you go back to our very, very first conversation about how much is enough to save for retirement. But when I see clients who are considering, even open to the idea of, I'm already maxing out my 401k, what else can I do? I also consistently see they make enough money that they can't contribute to the Roth IRA. That, especially for if it's a husband and wife, they both contribute $19,500 and they're maxing out their 401ks respectively. And now, because they're married filing jointly, and if they make, I believe it was $206,000, so they're contributing to combined $39,000, that would represent a 19% savings rate compared to that $206,000 contribution limit, the income restriction. So now if you have a couple who's maxing out their 401k and they are saving 19%, one, that actually might be enough for retirement. So do they need to save in a retirement account specifically? Two, if they want to, and they do need to save more, if they make significantly more. So now let's say they make $300,000 combined, maybe in that $300,000 to $400,000. That's where income restrictions mean that in practice, it is unusual for someone to make a full 401k contribution and a Roth IRA contribution because they can't max them both out. So what is the first thing that you do with someone who is looking to, they've already maxed out their 401k and they're looking for that next thing? Maybe it is a retirement account. So what are some other options that they have?
One thing that is on the table for some people is the ability to do what's known as a backdoor Roth. And this was a hazy gray area, but Congress actually cleared up a few things about it and said it's definitely a possibility and something that is allowed. So let's dig into it a little bit. What it is the ability to make a Roth contribution if you are over those income limits. And the high level gist is you first make that contribution into a traditional IRA, and then you convert it to a Roth IRA, and you're allowed to do that.
But
so
you
take the traditional, now you get the tax deduction, but when you convert it, you have to take those taxes back, so you don't get that benefit. But now you basically bypass that income limit concern, and that's known as the backdoor Roth IRA.
In the example I gave, because they're maxing out their 401k first, they actually make a non-deductible contribution to a traditional IRA. So the
in that scenario, yeah. If you're maxing out your 401k first, then yes.
And because they're making the non-deductible contribution, they don't get the tax deduction, but then all the money in that non-deductible traditional IRA is after tax anyways, the Roth conversion doesn't cost anything. So because the Roth IRA is funded with after-tax dollars and the non-deductible traditional IRA is also already after-tax dollars, there's no additional taxes on the conversion.
Right. So it's basically a loophole, a way to get money into the Roth if you happen to be over that income limit, which sounds kind of silly. You know, that Congress should probably just fix it so that either the loophole doesn't exist or just take away that cutoff. But here we are.
Yeah, that was one of the weird things I remember seeing, that the IRS doesn't like loopholes and doesn't like phrasing backdoor. But the strategy was kind of so consistent and prevalent that there were enough people with different workarounds that the IRS just allowed it. I don't know if I've seen them do that for anything else.
Yeah, I think they got tired of waiting for Congress to just make a sensible judgment on it that, you know, here we are, basically.
Okay. So now let's go a little bit deeper. And imagine kind of the last time you had a conversation with a client about making retirement contributions. Should they, let's say they have both a Roth 401k and a traditional 401k available to them at work, and they could also open up a traditional IRA or Roth IRA elsewhere. What are some of the things that you discuss with them and factors that come into play when you make a recommendation to clients?
Each situation is different, and it does get a bit complicated because there's a lot of moving parts, because there are a few other pieces to think about as well. One thing that we haven't mentioned yet is the HSA account. So the benefit of an HSA is you kind of get the benefit of a traditional and a Roth kind of boiled into one. And let me explain that a little bit. So the HSA is a health savings account. Why are we talking about that when we're talking about retirement? Well, the notion here is the government has this special account program like a Roth, but for healthcare. But the notion here is you can put in, if you're qualified to make a contribution to this type of account, I'll talk about that in a little bit, but you can put in about $7,000 a year, and you get to put this money in pre-tax, meaning you get a tax deduction up front. And it grows tax deferred, and you can take it out without paying tax for healthcare expenses. So basically, you get the pre-tax benefit and the post-tax benefit all rolled into one. And at past a certain age, you can use this for non-healthcare expenses. So this is something you might even consider before the traditional or the Roth, an HSA account. The other thing to consider is the 529 plans a couple of episodes ago. So the goal, of course, is to understand across all these various options what makes sense for a client, understanding their current tax burden and what their future tax burden may be. So What's a sensible solution with a lot of moving parts in between?
Okay. And the HSA, the health savings account, is used for healthcare costs, correct?
Yes, but you can use them for non-healthcare costs after a certain age.
Okay. Oh, I see what you're saying. So do you happen to know what that age is?
I think it's around the same time as a Roth or traditional, but we can throw that in the show notes.
Okay. Thank you. So around that 59 and a half, that is the, you have to wait until age 59 and a half to take money out of traditional or Roth IRAs?
Right.
Okay. So one of the things I like to point out to clients when asking, again, I agree, the 529 plan and the HSA, those are great savings vehicles for things other than retirement specifically. But when it comes to Roth 401k versus traditional 401k, again, the first one is, do we think your tax rate is lower now or in the future? And that's going to be the bigger factor. The other reason I tend to recommend the Roth is, again, because of those contribution limits. Anytime you are saving in the Roth, especially if you're maxing it out, you're effectively saving more money. And what I mean by that is, if you're trying to save $6,000 into your Roth IRA or your traditional IRA, if you contribute to the Roth, you're actually paying the taxes on that $6,000 somewhere else. The apples to apples comparison is $6,000 to the traditional, or say $4,500 to the Roth IRA. If you're contributing $6,000 to the Roth IRA, it's actually comparable to be contributing almost $8,000 to a traditional IRA. So anytime you are making that Roth contribution, unless you're actually doing the math of the after-tax dollars to the Roth I'm paying from that same money, anytime you're maxing out one of these retirement vehicles, whether it's a Roth IRA or Roth 401k, you are effectively saving more money than if you had made the same contribution to a traditional account. Now, a little bit of this is behavioral. A little bit of this is just kind of, yes, because you're making these after-tax contributions, your take-home pay, the amount that you have to spend is lower because you've paid taxes and savings. So it's just another form of spending less and saving more. But especially on the 401k side, because it comes out of your paycheck, most of my clients do a pretty amazing job of saving into that Roth 401k and then only living off their take-home pay. That tends to be a really effective way of bumping up their savings just a little bit. It's the little bit that the difference in taxes that they would be paying or receiving between a Roth and a traditional. So they're actually reducing their spending now to enable to max out a retirement account and pay the taxes. And that's what allows the Roth 401ks to grow to bigger dollars, is that once you account for the idea of after tax dollars, the Roth contributions are greater savings rates and greater savings dollars than traditional. So it's not a straightforward comparison that maybe people think about, but that is another reason why I tend to push Roth 401ks as much as possible, because it's just another way to get clients to save more. And it doesn't feel difficult or doesn't feel like a challenge to make those contributions.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. I did some of the math on that as well, just to provide some insight. So the limit is $6,000. But what that means for a Roth is, if you're in the 24% tax bracket, you could earn $7,895. And let's say you pay taxes on that, about, you know, $1,895. Then you can put your $6,000 in, meaning pre-tax, you had about $7,900. Mm-hmm. That's how much you can put into a Roth pre-tax. Again, you're paying the taxes up front, instead of later, but that's more than the $6,000 you would put in pre-tax for a traditional. So that's a good amount of difference. You're putting in close to $2,000 more each year into a Roth than you could a traditional pre-tax dollar for dollar.
Yep.
And over a lifetime, that can make a pretty good difference. So that's pretty nice to understand. The other thing I want to just round out is, since I mentioned the HSA, I wanted to just qualify a few things. One, in order to invest in the HSA, you need a high deductible plan that's qualified. So if your plan has a low deductible, then you won't be able to invest in an HSA. The other thing is the actual withdrawal age. So after age 65, not 59 and a half, after age 65, you can withdraw from an HSA for any reason. So it doesn't have to be healthcare related. So that's pretty neat, because you have a vehicle that's not really intended for retirement, but it can, if you don't really need the money for healthcare reasons before then, you can use it as a retirement vehicle.
I see. Okay. That's pretty interesting. That I learned something new today. I did know about HSAs. I did not know that you could take money out after age 65 for non-healthcare related costs. So
pretty neat. It seems like just one of those loopholes, which the IRS doesn't like.
So in the end, it's contribute to your Roth 401k, contribute to your Roth IRA, contribute to the 529 plan, contribute to the HSA, or more or less all the same advice that you see on Reddit and Twitter anyways.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But it's good to understand why we're kind of saying this. And hopefully this episode will provide some intuition into all that.
Exactly. Well, I like going deep on this. And we definitely oversimplified it. There's a lot of other caveats and workarounds. There's things like a 72T distribution. It's called systematic equal periodic payments. That allows you to take money out of IRAs or 401ks after age 55. But there's a lot of caveats related to that. With Roth IRAs, you can take out the contributions after 5 years, but there's a lot of tracking and a lot of caveats there. So we definitely oversimplified it, and there's more to go into for each individual case. Like you said, every client is different, every situation is different, but at a big picture, understanding kind of why these default assumptions are touted, well, not quite as gospel, but pretty widely, you can understand that why that's the case, but also your situation might differ a little bit, and it's worth getting a little more education and talking to an expert when it comes to retirement planning and which accounts to use.
Great. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm glad we had this conversation, and thanks everybody for listening.
Thanks, Trishul. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
We appreciate you joining us today for this episode of the Mind Money Spectrum podcast. Be sure to visit mindmoneyspectrum.com to access the entire library of episodes. Remember, it's not black and white, but the wide spectrum of gray area where you get to pursue the freedoms you want in life. Opinions voiced in this material are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance referenced is historical, as no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested in directly. Have a nice day.